So basically, if you could predict the sales of these companies ahead of time, you can literally predict the index at a macro level, right? Individual level, similarly.
Hey, and welcome to the Momentum Podcast, the show where fintech meets AI. I'm your host, Stan Altschuler, investor, founder, and advisor to some of the world's top hedge funds, asset managers, and data companies. Each week, we'll dive into practical AI strategies to help you cut through the noise, beat data overload, build smarter workflows, and turn your ideas into results. We'll explore everything from AI tools for your daily workflows to building data-driven growth engines for your organizations. Here, you'll discover what's next in finance and how to stay ahead of the curve with AI. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome to the Momentum Podcast. We have a great guest today for you. It's Puya from the Big Data Federation. Puya, say hello and give us a few words about yourself.
Hi, thanks for inviting us to this podcast. My name is Vigal. I am founder and CEO of Big Data Federation, where we create tools, forecast, and algorithm for trading. I've been doing it for 11 years, at least.
It's our pleasure having you, and thank you so much. I want to kick things off here with just a brief background about your career. So you've spent 20 years building wireless infrastructure. You've held very senior leadership roles at places like Intel and Cisco. You have over a dozen patents that I could find to your name in networking. So you've been in this as an industry insider for a long time. And then in 2015, you've pivoted a little bit and you started counting cars in retail parking lots. Tell us this story. It's absolutely fascinating. Why?
When I was in wireless and networking, we figured out the trend towards big data that was happening. The trend actually was pretty interesting because I saw everyone was making data available. It was not just a few alternative providers with some sort of proprietary data. I noticed governments are releasing more and more data. So I thought this data should have quite a bit of value. And in particular, I got interested in their value in finance, which was, can we predict sales of companies with live data? And at that time, a friend of mine went to a satellite company. We did PhD together. So I called him up and said, can you give us some images of parking lots and for R&D purposes, not for commercial purposes? And he did, and we gave him coordinates from Home Depot and Lowe's, and we got thousands and thousands of images that, and I had no capability of processing it, so I had to hire a bunch of people outside the country to literally count cars in those parking lots. So we thought, okay, if we know how many spots there are in the parking lot, this is at least 13, 14 years ago, and now there's a whole bunch of companies around that. Yes. And so we basically figured out a way to normalize the traffic of the in front of the stores. We didn't have every store image at every day. So that's a problem with satellites that are moving. So we had to extrapolate quite a bit. But it turned out we were able to predict the transactions. I think it was at Lowe's. Lowe's used to report transactions and the ticket basket size separately. I don't know if they still do that. So we were able to fairly accurately predict the transaction volume. And then we also noticed we used another model, which was the ticket price, which had very much seasonality. So it was a lineup slowly and a seasonality. So it was quite predictable. I think the first time we predicted on deep and low, I think we were 99.4% accurate to the number or something crazy. It was pretty much like a couple digits off on the million. And I didn't know what to do with it. So at the same time, another friend of mine, my colleague at Intel, I was the CTO of a division, he was CTO of another division. He went to a hedge fund in New York. So I called him up. I'm like, I'm doing that. Is this any value to you guys? I still didn't have a company. I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Just feed us the information, we trade on it. Yeah, that's where we got started.
That's great.
Yeah, that's where it all started. It was basically the trend I saw. And the whole reason I came to Silicon Valley was to do something. And
The 10 years gone, and I noticed, I'm like, oh my God, I came to Silicon Valley and I'm working for this big company. So what am I doing? Yeah. I'm just, let me go do and torture myself.
I work with a lot of fintech companies and alternative data companies, folks of that type, all servicing the same investor, the investor ecosystem, hedge funds and institutional investors. And the profile of the people that are starting these companies, there's, like you mentioned, there's a lot of alternative data companies out there. Funds do find a lot of value in that data. They kind of combine the transaction data plus receipts data plus the satellite data to see if they can tell a story. Are people that are parked in front of Lowe's are actually spending, and what the ticket size is, and so on. But usually the profile of these people are, the people that do it are finance people. Like, so they either come from a fund and they were doing this and they were consuming data at a fund and they're like, let's build a platform on top of this and sell it to others, or they were in a bank. So you, very different profile, a very different journey that you took to get here. And it actually made me think of like what Jim Simons used to hire his scientists to run the Medallion Fund and other funds since then at Renaissance. He made it a point that I don't want the finance folks. I don't want the investor types. I want the PhDs, kind of like yourself. I want the scientists that are not in the finance industry. They're not thinking about it. How do I trade and how do I make money? But they know the science exceptionally well. And I'm wondering if that gives you a more unpolluted, unbiased perspective. And why don't you tell us, like, how?
I think the reason we even exist, I think it's literally two things. One is ignorance. The other one is arrogance. The ignorance part of it is just because we didn't know what's the difference between fundamentals and stock price. For us, it was all numbers. And that gave us a different perspective. So all of a sudden, we didn't put ourselves in a zillion boxes that Wall Street has created for different things. And then the arrogant part of it was like, I was looking at the math that they do, and my background is digital signal processing. I'm like, geez, they're just looking at year over year. There's a third element. I love trading. I always traded, and I always wanted to make my trade more intelligent. I knew the value of fundamental. It's not something that would quickly vanish. It's not like chasing the price or anything. It was more about, yeah, they're going to be growing. I'm going to be safe more. That's how I was looking at it. So I think that it was basically my love for trading and the fact that I did not know all the stuff that would put me in boxes, right?
Yeah.
And also I thought what they were doing was quite primitive in many ways. It was quite primitive. You know, so all of these came together and, oh my God, yeah. It was not an easy journey. You know, I got beaten out.
You call it ignorance. And I would say maybe it's a little bit more like purity of thought, this elimination of the bias that we have on Wall Street as investors. We have our own story about a stock always, right? And we try to take the data and make it fit that narrative sometimes, even not even realizing we're doing that. Taking it, I think, from the scientific perspective, just look at the numbers, completely unbiased. I have this ignorance. I don't know about the market, but just give me the pure signal. I think there's some value there.
Yeah. You know, and the fact that I'm very much fundamentally oriented, you know, I always look at, you know, I don't get excited about the stock going up or freak out the stock going down. In my own personal, I don't really care. It's just for me, this is the leader in that space and the space is growing. And for me, it was always like, how do I quantify all of that?
Right.
You know, because as you said, market's so noisy. And I try to basically, I watch some of the videos on CNBC and very selective. And I wait for the weekend because I don't want them to influence me through the week. Because if we are in that environment, so noisy, and that noise would basically, before you know it, you think like everyone else. And that's not exactly the recipe to succeed. You can't just follow, you know, because you could all follow and fall off the cliff, right? So yeah, I mean, it's a very noisy place. So I think we're sticking to the numbers. The difference between us and other people, we're doing the very boring stuff. Predicting fundamentals is extremely boring. It happens 4 times a year. No data scientist is excited to work on it. You know, seriously, I mean, you could talk to any data scientist or do day trading, so then there's a lot more data.
Right. Yeah, but it's the boring stuff that sometimes makes you money. You come to work every day and you do what needs to be done, and that's just fine. If you find a formula that works, it happens to be boring, it doesn't matter. So when you, let's get into it a little bit. So you bet on the fundamentals, right? The fundamentals changing. So you probably look at KPIs like revenue, earnings. You probably look at guidance too, right? Because you have that information intra-quarter. Now, this does not directly translate into price action as the markets would have it. There's expectations. Some of this got to be built in. You're not the only data provider, and there's also other models. So walk us through that. So if the revenue surprise is already in there, how should we think about monetizing this data?
Yeah.
What are the markets already expecting?
So there is a bunch of things here, right, that I have to mention. So one thing, as soon as people hear that you're predicting something in the quarterly print, they think they have to trade it overnight on that quarter, right? That's not how the operation works. If you look at the U.S. stock market, God bless it, it's the best equity market out there, got the best companies, and it's also fairly efficient. Yeah, it does crazy stuff. It is an absolute predictor of things, right? You know, we actually did an analysis, like, you know, what happens when the U.S. economy goes to recession? In the stock market, we predict the stock market. No, we figured out it was the reverse. From the stock market, you could predict the U.S. recession, economic recession. So U.S. stock market is a big machinery of digesting and predicting things. So it is always predicting. Stock market is always predicting, right? That's all it is, right? SpaceX went public, now they're trying to predict, hey, 90x sales, where is the sales coming? I mean, I'm not going to comment on any particular company, but the market is really monitoring very closely. And we did an analysis.
It's the reflection of all the cumulative opinions.
All the information we're trying to predict things.
Institutional investors, retail, it's just a combination of everything.
Yeah, and they do a pretty good job at the macro level. It becomes less and less efficient. You get to the micro level because it's got the competitive issues. It's got all kind of other issues, right? So if you actually look at, we did an aggregation of fundamentals of S&P 500. As you know, the list keeps changing. So every quarter we went back. So it was the list. So we have built those infrastructure. We can go back, you know, 20, 30 years. We went back. And so why don't we just aggregate all the sales of those companies at that time, at any point in time. So any point in time, what is the 12 rolling, you know, fundamentals we have annual? Let's just add it up. And then let's now think that we knew the revenue of these companies one quarter out, right? So imagine, you know, one quarter out and you map it on top of S&P 500. It's a perfect match. It's a perfect match. It's scary. I will send you.
Yeah.
With the exception of a few years, one of them, 2022.
If there's something you could share publicly with our viewers,
we'll
be happy. Right in the description of this video.
So basically, if you could predict the sales of these companies ahead of time, you can literally predict the index at a macro level, right? Individual level, similarly. So it's all about what is the expectation and right now, and what's the estimate that you have. If you have any little edge in that, it would translate to winning over time. But, you know, again, we don't make it, you know, we always explain to people our forecasts are not trading signals. You have to and apply a whole bunch of things to create your own portfolio. We do supply our forecasts to quant funds, and our reports are also freely available for now, one day before the report, for one quarter. It's available on Bloomberg, FactSet, AlphaSense, it's all there,
that's great.
Right? That's great. So we're opening up our forecast. If they need a data feed or they need a earlier access to the forecast, then they have to pay. And then you may wonder, why are we sharing our stuff if it's so good? Here's the beauty of fundamental is, I want everyone to see what I'm doing.
Right.
It helps everyone. You know, I wish people saw what we saw in 2022, that we saw nothing in the recession and the earnings. But market was acting, we're going to go belly up, interest rates are going to go to 20%, yeah, we're all going to die, and right? They were over-predicting things, right? But,
This is the COVID and the fallout from
the COVID and pandemic. Right? Yeah, and then, the hangover the following year. So, you know, I think fundamentals we love everyone to see. You know, it helps everyone, and it doesn't mean people are going to come to the same conclusion. Different people have different...
And I used to be a consumer of a lot of alternative data, and I spoke to dozens and dozens of managers who have built quite a sizable alternative data operation, each in their own right. Very different ways to interpret things, different ways to look at the same data. It would always surprise me to see a couple of different analysts looking at the same exact data on the same exact stock, and then walking away with a different conclusion on the same... No, and it's possible, certainly. Yeah. But what everyone will tell you, everyone of these data scientists or kind of data savvy investors, you might call them, right? They will tell you that image data or GPS data or credit card data or clickstream data, downloads, all of that is just a small piece in a full data mosaic. It's just a small thing. You can't just look at just one thing in isolation and then build your portfolio. And you've alluded to this. How do you size things? How do you account for factors and risk and all that?
Yeah.
And then furthermore, they will tell you even just data is also a piece in the overall mosaic. Even just data is just cut here and it's silo. And then there's other things besides we need to keep in mind when you are investing and building a portfolio at an institutional level, not just for RPA, right? That's different.
Right.
So how do you take that thought? And then you're running your money, right? So you have this fund called Ultra Blue.
Yeah.
Walk us through it. How do you bridge that gap? How does that work?
So Big Data Federation has two separate entities. One is Ultra Blue Capital. The other one is Financial AIs, where we sell our data and our tools through. And Ultra Blue Capital is where we manage money. So Ultra Blue Capital, we basically are using our own fundamental forecast to invest. The fund is long biased, and we have about 40 different sub-strategies, overlays, that trade commodities and trade oil, gold, and bonds, and they do all various types of hedging. And we use fairly sophisticated instruments. So the hedge fund is fully automated. Now, we're monitoring it very closely, but there's a major difference between us and other quants. So first of all, it would take us about a minute to backtest the strategy. We basically have built an AI system. We just talk to it. We just talk to the strategy and it builds it for us. And now we're taking this tool and giving it to everyone. You know, people can go and type their own strategy and see the backtest.
Are these strategies per name, per individual ticker, based on the data you have?
You're basically come and say fairly sophisticated stuff. Buy Japanese equity when dollar is like that,
macro.
When Europe is like, you can do macro, or you can go down to stock level and say, buy top five stocks with the fastest growing revenue. And you can also pull in our forecast that you think they're going to beat.
Yeah.
So you can bring in our own data in there. So basically, the value that, you know, and literally I did it for myself. I thought, I want to invest this way. Why don't I build it through a formal format, and maybe some people would come in and put money in? And even to date, we do not have a business development for the fund. It's basically word of mouth, and people in the valley come in and different size of contribution they put in. But we don't lock them in. We don't have a lockup.
Okay.
And
so it's a different standard hedge fund.
Yeah.
You got the,
we don't have a lockup. And, you know, we've been killing it for the past 4 years or so.
Yeah.
For me, it's a cash flow and it's a nice business. And for me, it's always a proof of concept that the approach we're taking, we can monetize. It's a very hard business because you cannot have one strategy and just go sleep. No, the conditions change. The only thing that survives over time is fundamental. If you can predict the fundamental, right? there could be a tariff or there could be this. If you have a good forecast on the fundamental, you know, you may have volatility over time, you win. You know, it's pretty much like, if you look at why does Warren Buffett advise everyone to put money in indices, which is a good advice, right? Yeah. But what is indices? So indices are
basically great for Vanguard and the likes.
Cap weighted stocks. Okay. So if you have buy a share of S&P 500 or SPY, your largest holding is Nvidia because it is the largest market cap. But how did it become the market cap, which is the largest? Because they have the best fundamental, either their margin or their sale, their profit, something related to that. So market is always rewarding these companies by giving them more weight. It's like the eagle, you know, eagles have two kids. They're not like humans, right? So we have two kids, one of them is weaker than the other. We try to take care of the weak one more. Market is like, it supports both of them. One is getting weak. So now I'm just going to feed the strong one and let the weak one die. So market is effectively doing that filtering.
Right.
For you can get ahead of that if you have some forecast on a fundamental, right?
Yeah.
But it is not something like, oh, I need to have it. I need to trade it today. Tomorrow my signal dies. It's not like that, you know, on the fundamental, right? So
it's very interesting. Yeah. So most folks do look still, even to this day, even though everyone says that they're longer term investors, I would say that the majority of them look at alternative data and they kind of try to predict the surprise. Things are changing. Yeah. The one problem that alternative data has or has had, at least the optics of it, right? And what kind of people grumble about is they say that there's an alpha decay. No matter what piece of data you have, if it's the value is proven and there's power in it and it's monetizable, inadvertently, eventually enough dollars chase that data signal. And there's alpha decay, right? Because the markets are efficient and there is a bunch of inefficiency, like retail doesn't get this data, but at some point the institutional capital, it just becomes such a predominant driver of these fluctuations, especially around earnings, that basically people are saying, hey, there's alpha decay. So you've been doing this for over 10 years, right? You're running a fund on it. Have you seen any alpha decay? If so, where? And if not, why not?
So the alternative data, we've been through it all. We tried everything you can imagine. So we break it to three types, okay? So, and as soon as I explain them, you can see the problems in them, right?
Yeah.
One is panel data, which is what most people use. You have your email receipts. What is a panel data? Basically, they stick some sort of an app running in the background collecting someone's data, right?
It's a sample. They're not going to get everything. They're just going to have a sample if it's not biased. Yeah. Yeah.
Here's a problem with that, right? So let's take that email receipt.
They're
so they were collecting data and all of a sudden Gmail changed their terms of service. Yeah. All of a sudden you see their user population hugely dipping. Right. And then they started to build it back up. If the panel is not stable, which it cannot be, becomes very dangerous, you see?
Absolutely.
That's one scary thing. So that's the panel data. Can you make your panel stable? Okay. Which we don't trust that. We do not use any panel data anymore. There is another data type which is much worse than panel data. We call it survey type.
So
they don't even have a panel. They just call people whoever picks up the phone. Yeah. Right? Consumer confidence is one of them.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
I don't want to put anything serious on that because I get those surveys and when I'm in a good good mood, I may answer them. It's just one of those, and I'm gonna go block her now. One of those surveys, right? So panel, then survey. Then there's a third part which is beautiful. We call it factual data. So what are these? They're alternative, but they're factual. So I'll give you an example. TSA publishes every day 1,000 page of PDF, basically showing the traffic at every checkpoint in every airport in the United States. There's no revision to this number. This is it. All electronically connected. That's a fact.
It's So
another bank with all these associations, like Semiconductor Association, they have 50, 60 members, all pretty much everyone is in the area of semiconductor. NVIDIA is there, AMD is there, Intel. They report the component sales, they have classification, the price they sold, which country they sold. It's beautiful, it's a huge data set. It's a fact, it's aggregated. It doesn't say what NVIDIA did, but it has GPU in there. It's not something that regular analysts can read and extract. The problem with that, it is 45 days late. Okay, now you have to train your model with that lag. Like there's association everywhere, there's RV association. Then there's companies themselves, they publish weekly stuff, like railroad companies, every week they publish what they transported, how many cars of oil they transported, how many came. Beautiful. So, you know, that's where we went into, and we dropped those alternative data. Again, we don't see anything bad in them. But to your point, even if you have a perfect number about Amazon e-commerce sales, what good does it do? You got their AWS thing. You got, you know, you got their, you know, the Whole Food thing. You got, you know, digital media. So many different parts to these companies. So what we do is we do a connected economy approach. We bring in and say, all these companies are related to each other. One, someone's sales here is someone's capex here. We do that at scale. And we don't have humans putting their nose into this. No, I'm the expert in data science. Let me tell you what is the capex of it. No, we just let the machines do it. And it turns out to be fairly accurate. So we think this is, you know, it's a scientific, it's not accurate all the time, every single time, right?
Yeah.
Especially when there's
You publish hit rates for this data. It's somewhat upwards of 90% batting average, which is extremely.
So 90% shots, we usually predict if a revenue is beat or not, but considering a bunch of confidence metric, not on everything. So about 30%, so we predict 1,400 stocks every quarter. About 20-30% of them, we have high confidence. Usually 90% of the time when we say it's a beat, you know, on the revenue and EPS. But it doesn't mean that stock is going to just jump tomorrow.
Yes, so and that goes, but obviously you have to have the full picture, right? It's interesting that you've taken that approach, that your inputs are like these solid data sets that are just not really dependent on the traditional panel volatility and these biases that are really difficult to get rid of on alternative data. I've seen some nightmare scenarios where people make mistakes just based on how Lulu is classified in a transaction receipt. There's ways to deal with it, but it's not for everybody. It's not great. So you've had an extraordinary journey in life. So you went from Sharif University in Tehran with a PhD in England, and then you're now running a Silicon Valley engineering team, you're running a fund. There's many reinventions in your life. What did that journey teach you about yourself? What do you love the most? And then as you tell us that little insight, what actually keeps you excited to come to work every day? And how do you give that little bit to your team to actually have that same feeling?
I think life is all about passion, right? So you gotta have passion. So when I was in Iran, hardship, war, parents sick, I had to take care of my dad, old dad. So I love math. You know, that's what I was good at. I was not good at memorizing anything. And then I got my hands on first computer somehow. And then I'm like, I don't need to memorize anything. This thing does. So I started to focus on logic, and you know, my dad was a medical doctor. He was upset I didn't go to medicine. But I got interested more and more in computers quite a bit. And wireless also is pretty mathematical. It was good for me. But I was like, I had a computer. I'm like, where is this chip in it? What's the brain? And it's Intel. I'm like, where is Intel? Oh, in Silicon Valley. Where is AMD? So since I was 16, 17 years old, I wanted to be here. And, you know, so, and to date, it's for me, it's all about innovation, passion. I don't know what I would be doing in 10 years. I have no idea. But all I know is every year I'm filing one or two patents on different booths. I think life is too short to waste it on hate and politics and, you know, this useless stuff. We got a lot bigger mission here.
I love
to
that.
Advance, right?
Yeah.
Whichever way you think about it, either you're religious or not, it's just the fact that we are here is a magic. It doesn't matter if you believe in God or not. It's just magical, right? Every minute counts. And I think that passion comes out of you when you really believe in, right? And the people would want to hang around with passionate people. And
of course. That's contagious. Have that feeling that there's not a second to waste and you have to really live up to your full potential. It does require a lot of work. Sometimes, like you said, the work could seem repetitive or boring, but it's the right journey that you're on that is very rewarding. So how do people find you? So we are going to include some links at the bottom here on the comment section of this video on YouTube and elsewhere. If people wanted to reach out to you, how would they find you and how do they get in touch?
So if they have my full name, it is such a weird name. I'm only one on LinkedIn. So I'm easy to find on LinkedIn.
Okay, so we'll have your LinkedIn bio there.
Yeah, and then we're passing through all our... So every tool we have built, we're putting it under Financial AI, which is a registered trademark. So there's another website called thefinancial.ai. So thefinancial.ai. If you're interested in what we're doing, add yourself to the wait list. We are now partnering with people, with companies. You know, soon we're going to be releasing our tool, the AI tool, to public. We're seeing a massive demand on that. So basically, everything we have built, every infrastructure, I'm not giving them our trading algorithm. That's something else. That's for the other hedge fund. But every tool that we have to build our stuff, including our forecast, is here.
That's amazing.
We believe people are going to end up with different strategies where they can backtest their ideas, improve it, and so forth.
You also mentioned that you've got a data feed on Bloomberg, is that right?
We have on Bloomberg, on FactSet, on AlphaSense, and we have also partnership with multiple brokers, with TradeStation, with Tradier, with Webull. For retail, we're going to all the brokers, so we're signing up one broker a week now. Fantastic. On that. So we're just basically spreading the message to everyone.
Great.
They're paying for the service for the users.
This is excellent. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your journey with the listeners here at Momentum Podcast. Puya, we really appreciate you. We're going to include all those links so folks can find you and reach out to you, hopefully get to use some of your data, get to get a little taste of how you guys work, how you think. Can't thank you enough.
Thanks everybody
for tuning in. Thanks for tuning into Momentum. If you found today's episode valuable, don't forget to follow the show and share it with your network. This helps us a lot. To explore how AI can help your firm, visit acadia.im. I'm Stan Altschuler, and I'll see you next week with more practical insights to help turn data into growth and decisions into results with the help of AI.